The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Thursday, October 28th, and we are just 5 days away from changing the world. The 2010 election, November 2nd, 2010, will be coming to you live from Oaksterdam University, the headquarters for the Prop 19 campaign, and the first blow in our ending of marijuana prohibition, not only in California, but the United States and the rest of the world. It's a good time to be alive. And if you're new to the marijuana law reform bandwagon, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you here. Also joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, my good friend and quarter sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, Russ. How's it going?
Oh, it's
going. Before we went on the show today, listen, I want to tell you, right before we went on the show today, there was a little knock at my door, and Yellow Wanna Cake from the stash room is listening to the show in the living room.
Oh,
how fun.
Oh, Yellow Wanna Cake in the house. That's so good to hear. This is one of the fun things about doing this show and just being on the internet in general is how you meet so many people from all over the country that you never would have had a chance to meet before. People that are like-minded and, in the case of Yellow Wanna Cake, really, really cool. So thanks for being here.
That's right. All the cool people. That's right.
That's right. All the cool people. And we are experiencing some great traffic here at Normal Show Live as well. Right now, we're up to 260 live listeners. It's the most I've seen in the room for a long time. And last night, I posted a Politicians on Pot map. For those of you who are looking at who to vote for, here at Normal, we're a federally tax-exempt organization, so we can't put up one of those, you know, voter scorecards, you know, vote yes for this guy, vote no for that guy. We can't do that under, you know, federal lobbying laws. However, we have collected over years and years and years many of the emails and letters that the elected officials write back to our listeners and our readers, and we collect them and we've tagged them, and they're all available now at a place called Politicians on Pot at stash.normal.org. Just go to the website, stash.normal.org. Look on the right-hand side. You'll see Politicians on Pot, and you can click there. You'll get a map of the United States. Click on your state, and every single email or reference we've ever had from any politician is there. So you can find out in their own words what they think about marijuana law reform, and you can make your own mind up as to whether they deserve your vote. We got a lot of stuff to talk about on today's show, but we always start off with our hemp headlines. Right after the first break. Carrie, what's in the news today?
Well, today we're going to look outside the borders to see that, yes, other countries are also watching this election with great anticipation, as we are. A group in Texas is offering a $10,000 challenge, and a SWAT raid in Washington goes terribly wrong.
We also have, at the end of the news today, we've got a very special missive from one of our former presidents. You'll be really excited to hear about this one and his endorsement of Prop 19. Also on today's show, it's the fourth Thursday, and on the second and fourth Thursdays, we always visit with law enforcement against prohibition. Now, I know we've heard from them on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, but today we get them one-on-one. Stephen Downing, a former Los Angeles deputy police chief, will be joining us to talk about why cops say legalize drugs and pass Prop 19. Also, a radical rant at the end of the show. I'm going to be showing you the propaganda video being put out by the opponents of medical marijuana in the state of Arizona. Arizona is voting on Prop 203, which will legalize medical marijuana in that state, and they are pushing an awful video to try to scare the voters down there. Also, in our second hour, we are going to rebroadcast the entire hour-long telephone town hall meeting that took place last night for Prop 19. All of that and more coming up on today's Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation. Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record. Is that freedom? Freedom.
I'm free to do whatever. Georgia. Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
As the eyes of the nation are fixed on the Californian vote to legalize marijuana, our world leaders are also taking notice of the outcome of this historic election. Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos has said that if Proposition 19 passes, it could force his country to rethink its drug policies. President Santos this summer endorsed a call for debate on drug legalization. Santos asked this week at a Latin American presidential summit in Colombia, quote, "If we don't act in a consistent way on this issue, if all we are doing is to send our fellow citizens to jail while in other latitudes the market is being legalized, then we have to ask ourselves, isn't it time to review the global strategy against drugs?" Unquote. He also said that he did think legalization would increase consumption of drugs, even though that hasn't happened in countries with liberal drug policies like Portugal. But he also said legalized marijuana in California might make the fight against drug cartels tougher throughout Latin America. Colombia's Minister of Foreign Relations said that Colombia's new seat on the United Nations Security Council could be a good place to start a worldwide discussion on the way the war on drugs has been conducted. President Juan Santos isn't new to the idea of drug law reform. Back in 1998, before he was the president of Colombia, he sent a letter to the Secretary General of the UN, Kofi Annan, denouncing the war on drugs as a failed and futile experiment and calling for drug policies to be based on common sense, science, public health, and human rights. The U.S. Deputy Secretary of State under Hillary Clinton, James Steinberg, said in a visit to Bogota, Colombia this week that voter approval of Prop 19 would create a turning point in drug policy, but that the U.S. federal government would continue the fight against marijuana. Many Mexican, Colombian, and other Latin American lawmakers have said that legalizing could be the only way to control the black market of marijuana and the violence that it creates. But others, like Mexican President Felipe Calderon, have continued to urge a hard stance on eradication efforts fighting the drug cartels. Colombian Senator Eduardo Henriquez said that the United States would set a bad example for the world to adopt such a policy of legalizing marijuana. Colombia's discussion of the issue is just the latest sign that the vote in California next week has repercussions far reaching the borders of California. If Prop 19 doesn't pass, well, it will be just one more step in the larger march to repeal cannabis prohibition. But if it does pass, it will be a signal to the world that the time is now to rethink our worldwide drug policies.
You know that all these Latin American presidents are looking at Prop 19 because, as one of them has said, one of the presidents of Mexico said, it's tough to be fighting the drug traffickers and the drug growers, the marijuana growers in Mexico, when they live next door to the world's largest drug consumer, the United States. And this is something we're going to have to watch out for, whether or not Prop 19 passes. But especially if Prop 19 passes, we have to watch out for the fact that it's going to be legal in California, but nowhere else in the United States. And that might have all sorts of unintended consequences that the prohibitionists will point at and say, oh, see, you legalized in California, look what terrible stuff happened. When in actuality, what will be happening are the shockwaves as people start to understand prohibition is falling, and some of these cartels and some of these drug dealers push extra hard to try to get their product to market. We saw that just this last couple of weeks in Tijuana, where they came up with 134 tons of marijuana in Tijuana that was bound for the United States. You think those drug traffickers are maybe trying to get in their last possible big sale there before we close the doors on them with passing Prop 19? I think so. So be careful, folks. We got to be diligent.
A group of cannabis activists in Texas are offering $10,000 to anyone in their state who can disprove that marijuana is safer than alcohol. Taking their cue from the book Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink?, co-written by Paul Armentano of Normal, Mason Tevert of Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation, and Steve Fox of the Marijuana Policy Project, the Safer Texas campaign has put up the money to anyone who can prove three statements claiming marijuana is safer than alcohol are incorrect. Number one, alcohol is significantly more toxic than marijuana, making death by overdose far more likely with alcohol. Number two, the health effects of long-term alcohol consumption cause tens of thousands of more deaths in the U.S. annually than the health effects from the long-term consumption of marijuana. And finally, three, violent crime committed by individuals intoxicated by alcohol is far more prevalent in the U.S. than violent crime committed by individuals intoxicated by marijuana only. Now, Safest Texas campaign manager Craig Johnson said that his group is confident that the $10,000 reward will remain unclaimed. The book notes that many universities have begun trying to educate students to consume alcohol responsibly. Fox, Armentano, and Tevert question why it is not appropriate to suggest that they should party responsibly with a less harmful substance like marijuana instead. Unlike alcohol, marijuana is not associated with assault or rape. In a written statement, the Safer Texas campaign says, quote, every objective study on alcohol and marijuana has shown marijuana is much safer substance than alcohol to both the user and to society. Craig Johnson goes on to say, if our elected officials can take millions of dollars from the alcohol industry and make it easier for alcohol distributors to sell alcohol in cities, they simply do not have the credibility to continue marijuana prohibition and punishing adults for making the safer, rational choice of using marijuana instead of alcohol. The Safer Texas campaign is also calling on all Texas incumbents and other candidates for state and federal government offices to publicly pledge to stop accepting money and other gifts from the alcohol industry until Texas passes a law that taxes and regulates the marijuana market in a similar manner. Good luck with that.
Yeah, it's kind of a sucker bet, of course. We all know that marijuana is safer than alcohol. There's no way anyone's going to win that 10 grand. You know what might be more fun is to have a $10,000 contest, and we'll give one group all the alcohol they could possibly drink and the other group all the marijuana they could possibly smoke. And the next day we give $10,000 to the group that has fewer regrets.
A 50-year-old military veteran was shoved to the floor in a SWAT raid over two small legal cannabis plants on Monday night. Will Landowski is a medical marijuana patient, so in his state, he is allowed to grow up to 15 plants and possess 24 ounces of marijuana. But a complaint about marijuana in the fourplex apartment building where he lives led to the 9 p.m. raid on Monday night. Seattle police from the East Precinct held a briefing about the marijuana complaint before the SWAT team of 6 to 9 officers ran upstairs to Mr. Landowski's apartment. They came carrying submachine guns, others were carrying pistols, and one was carrying a battering ram. Mr. Landowski hurried to the door in his bathrobe when he heard the pounding from the other side and the men shouting that they were the police. Just before he could reach the door handle to open the door, the men burst through and rushed the 50-year-old man, throwing him to the ground. As some officers held the man down with his face to the floor, the others began tearing through his apartment. He told them he was a medical marijuana patient and asked the officers if he could show them his paperwork. The police paperwork later revealed that the man did indeed have paperwork declaring his marijuana grow was for medical purposes, and the officers did observe two small, less than 12 inches, marijuana plants each growing in pots. The Seattle Police Department and the mayor's office have continually insisted that marijuana possession in the city is the lowest law enforcement priority, and they recognize that Washington state law allows for authorized patients to use and grow cannabis. Advocates are troubled at the paramilitary raids being conducted for such a small offense. For all his trouble, Landowski, a veteran airborne ranger who served in Desert Shield and is disabled from a car accident in 2005, now has a door with cracks running down the middle and a bolt that could no longer keep him safe. He'd only moved into the apartment 1 month earlier, and the police had taken all of the unpacked boxes that he had in his room, emptied them to the floor, and tore his apartment up looking for something that just wasn't there. Sean Whitcomb, a spokesman for the Seattle police, said that clearly in this case, there was no law violation that was discovered. He went on to say that had his officers known that the man was a legal patient with such a small amount of marijuana, they would have spent their time doing something else. So many are asking why the police didn't simply knock on the door and talk to him, but Whitcomb explained that knock and talks are not the protocol for drug cases. In this case, the police say a neighbor complained. They then sent out a drug sniffing dog who marked the apartment door and a week later conducted the raid with a warrant. Landowski said that the military veteran, he's puzzled why the police used so much force against him and says he's done nothing to draw the attention of law enforcement. Neither the police nor the King County Superior Court that issued the warrant could provide a copy of the affidavit by police, which would provide the basis of probable cause. So we'll wait and see on that one.
Again, I must quote the late Senator Robert Byrd. Barbaric! There is no excuse for this. This was all about them trying to make a point. This was all about them trying to intimidate lawful medical cannabis users and the unlawful recreational users of cannabis. It once again highlights why medical marijuana laws do not go far enough. We must legalize now. Now, I got to give something a little more interesting here. We have a note from a former president here that was brought to me by Mr. Harvey Wasserman, and I don't know what kind of strange time travel technology they managed to use here, but it's a message from the father of our country. Hello, Californians. What a lovely name. I only wish I had seen your countryside in my lifetime. I am talking to you through Thomas Paine to say that it is time to end this silly ban on smoking hemp, or as you now call it for some reason, marijuana. In my lifetime, there was no plant for which I had a greater fondness. It was easiest to grow of all my crops and the most profitable. We used it for clothing, rope, sails, textiles, feed, food, fuel, and much more. Certainly, there was no crop for which our brave American farmers had greater enthusiasm. It was the number one cash crop on virtually all farms in America and probably the top money earner for all states taken together. My good friend Thomas Jefferson vastly preferred it to tobacco or to any other crop he grew. He wrote his wonderful declaration on paper made from it. Ben Franklin built an entire mill that used hemp as its primary stock. And although we wrote about it rarely, we all enjoyed smoking a good pipeful at the end of the day. Knowledge of this came to us through the Greeks and Romans, and before that, the Chinese and Indians, whose seeds I greatly treasured and widely recommended. Of course, our friends among the native tribes often provided us with the very best of their smoking matter. Though it is somewhat difficult to retain decorum about this issue, I must tell you that if anyone had walked into our Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia and told us that someday, in this great nation we were founding, citizens would be put in jail for possessing this great herb, we would have laughed them out of the room. Now that I see what is being done to innocent citizens who raise and smoke this herb as we did, I am tempted to demand that the authorities responsible for this foolishness themselves be incarcerated. So as the father of your country, I order you to vote for Proposition 19. I realize, of course, that I am no longer Commander-Chief or even your President, and our great nation is a democracy, so you are free to do as you choose, and I have said this to get your attention. But how do you think we survived at Morristown and Valley Forge? Under what other influence could I have dared to dream of crossing the Delaware in the dead of winter to surprise the Hessians at Trenton? I have said enough. I merely wish to remind you that every founder who had land grew hemp. Every drafter of the Constitution, when asked, would wonder how on earth it ever became illegal. Your children and grandchildren will someday ask the same. I left this planet knowing future generations would revere us for the wisdom and bravery to stand with what was natural and right. As a founder, I expect all Americans to exhibit the same common sense. Vote yes on Proposition 19 and begin the restoration of sanity to this great nation. May God bless the United States of America. George Washington. Thanks again, Harvey Wasserman, for that fantastic little letter. We've got it posted up at stash.normal.org. Take a look at it, because it's what is true. The founders would never stand for this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny
Reefer Man? We're back in just a few minutes with your daily Toker Tunes. It's Groovin' Thursday with John Doe Radio. Stick around. Devin the Dude is up next.
If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that Reefer Man.
There's a crisis in California.
Actually, this is Dr. Talleyrand, Jean Talleyrand. I represent 200,000 patients throughout the state of California. Our company's name is Medican, and we are not dispensers of marijuana. We are medical marijuana evaluators.
Clinics like Medican that write permission slips to use marijuana could join California's unemployed on November 2nd. California's Prop 19 would mean you could grow, possess, share, and even buy cannabis to treat your ailments without medical permission slips. Do you really think you can manage your own herbal health care without a $150 doctor's note? If you vote yes on 19, it means no tickets, no permission slips, and no Medican. You wouldn't want that, would you?
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers in Des Moines, Iowa. America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, now available on iTunes and CD, baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Hey now, friends. Grateful Dread here from the studios of Grateful Dread Public Radio, the progressive peace voice of Summit, New Jersey. Check out our kind music mix and news talk at gdreadradio.net. We're keeping very busy here at GDPR. We're working on our fall season. We're getting ready for the holidays, gearing up for the election, encouraging everybody.
John Doe here with your Groovin' Thursday tune on Normal Show Live. Devin the Dude, no stranger to cannabis users, and cannabis is no stranger to Devin the Dude. Almost all his cuts of music are about token on the fine green, and if they aren't directly related to marijuana, they certainly involve him sparking a joint somewhere in the process. His last three album titles have been Waitin' to Inhale, Landing Gear, and Sweet 420. No question to his devotion. Even putting aside all the great references to cannabis, you're still left with a more chilled and relaxed rapper and hip-hop artist. While other rappers boasted being the hypest or crunkest, Devin the Dude, a.k.a. Devin Copeland, is more fit and satisfied for his laid-back style in reference to life. Not to say he doesn't cover the more serious topics in tunes. Living life in rougher times and coming out of Houston, it's surprising his style has turned out as such. But all the more for us to enjoy as stoners. The tune What We Be On is off Devin the Dude's last album titled Sweet 420. Also, if you enjoy great hip-hop, especially with a slight funky twist, make sure you look into more of his music if you haven't already. I am John Doe. Until we meet again, Unto John, I hope you are doing well. Russ, thank you very much. You guys, make sure you head to johndoradio.com. We made it a ton more easier for everybody to download the podcast. I appreciate Normal like no other. Till we meet again, and cannabis is legal in Cali. See ya.
Folks be tripping on me, I just be doing my thing. Hoes be liking the way my big old nuts hang and swing. People out in public see me smoking on my herb. They want me to sell them some, but I must conserve. I be getting by, I be staying focused, I be getting high. I hardly get noticed, I be on my grind, I be on my hustle, y'all. I stay on my P's and Q's, my weed and brew. Just the tools that I use to get me in a good mood. Sometimes I get tipsy, get so high that I forget that I had enough and I just keep puffing this shit. A lot of times I'm cool, although it seems I'm fast asleep.
Say, man, I'm playing ping pong with these motherfuckers. My head passed to me.
I be getting by, I be staying focused, I be getting high, I hardly get noticed. On my grind, I be on my hustle, y'all. I stay on my P's and Q's, my weed and brew. Just the tools that I use to get me in a good mood. Chill out at the crib, I roll my green, smoke so much. No female companion, and it seems I lost my touch. But I love the ladies, and the ladies, they love me. When I was 10, my teenage girlfriend asked me for some wee-wee. I be getting by, I be staying focused, I be getting high, I hardly get no. Tools that I use to get me in a good mood. I don't know about you. Everybody got their own niche.
Each and every one of you knows some kind of shit.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search.
If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition.
Welcome back, everyone. Half past the hour, and we're joined now by former Los Angeles Deputy Sheriff Stephen Downing, a speaker for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm not a Los Angeles Deputy Sheriff. I'm retired LAPD Deputy Chief.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Deputy Chief.
That's okay.
Gotcha. Okay. We've been hearing from you a lot lately. We've been playing the last couple of press conferences from the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. You with Joseph McNamara and Norm Stamper and the other fine former law enforcement officers who realize prohibition is folly. What got you involved in LEAP and making the decision to stand up against prohibition?
Well, you know, during my career, I slowly came to see that prohibition wasn't working. And several years ago, I wrote an article in the Los Angeles Times that went to this subject, and I wrote a letter to the editor, and it was published in the Times. And as a result of that letter, I got a call from LEAP. I wasn't aware of the organization at the time, and so I spent some time with them. I vetted them, and I found that they were an upfront organization with a lot of integrity, and they asked me to take part, and so I started taking part and joined their speakers bureau, and then Proposition 19 came along, and of course, it's it provides us the great opportunity for a first major step in getting an exit strategy to this war on drugs.
Hmm. You know, those of us in our audience, you know, listening with Normal, of course, we're all supporters of Prop 19, and we could sit here and point out all the benefits legalization of marijuana would have for our audience. What I'm interested in here, and again, speaking to you as someone who was with the LAPD, you know, we had Daryl Gates was there at the LAPD for a long time. That's where DARE started. What benefits do Prop 19 have for Los Angeles police officers?
Well, I think the benefits are huge. I think that the police officers, and especially the chief of police, and especially the city fathers, should celebrate the potential that Proposition 19 offers to them, especially in terms of scaled down budgets in this economy. Just today in the headlines, in page one on the Los Angeles Times, they announced that they're pulling 92 officers out of the field and putting them into a new jail because they can't hire civilian jailers.
Yeah.
Well, what Proposition 19 is going to do to them, for them, is going to remove a workload that's just massive. In California, in 08, the last statistics are that there was 61,000 arrests, tickets written for marijuana possession. Well, the drug czars minimize this by, oh, it's only a misdemeanor now. It's a infraction. But it's 61,000 tickets. So when you rank 61,000 tickets across California and look at the cost of each ticket in terms of law enforcement time, it translates to about $61 million. But for gift of money, what it does is you write the ticket, but it's no little thing like a drug's RSA. Then you got to go to the station, and you got to book the evidence. And you got to write the report for booking the evidence. So at the minimum, that officer's going to be out of the field for an hour and a half. Well, when I was a watch commander in South Central Los Angeles, I would routinely get calls, especially on the busier nights, from communications that says, "Lieutenant, you're out of cars. And we've got five or six urgent calls waiting, quote, two calls waiting." Well, I was servicing a community, policing a community of 300,000 people, and I didn't have one police car in the field to respond to an emergency call. So we'd run into the report room. That's the first thing we'd, stop and try to find somebody who we could put their work on temporary hold and get them back out in the field. And more times than not, we had officers in there booking little small possession amounts of marijuana. So if Proposition 19 passes, that kind of thing is going to stop. But beyond that, that marijuana goes to the crime lab, and it has to be put into a priority queue because a ticket's been written and somebody's going to be going to court. So that testing in the lab takes priority over other things that are there to be tested. And as you well know, if you've ever sat on a murder, robbery, auto theft desk, detectives are waiting for their clues to come back from the lab so they can move forward with their case and try to solve it. Well, those cases are delayed. Those 61,000 tickets written in California in 08, in the same year, there were 60,000 violent crimes that went unsolved. In Los Angeles County a couple of weeks ago, there was a big stir about the fact that the county regional lab was backlogged by 12,000 rape kits. So you have women out there who are victims of rape that are waiting as many as 3 years while the detectives wait to get their rape kits processed. And that was a big shuffle. Well, detectives are waiting for more than rape kits to be processed. As you well know, the majority of rapists are serial rapists. So if you're waiting 3 years for your case, that serial rapist is at large for 3 years. And then beyond that, it's all the lab testing for the murders and the burglaries and the robberies and all of that. So what I'm saying is that police departments, rather than clinging to the status quo, they should be celebrating the potential release of workload that Proposition 19 will provide to them. And it's going to have the domino effect as well, because Proposition 19 is going to make it harder for kids to get drugs. We know that there was a spike last year among 12-year-olds, and the drug czar asked for $23 million more to continue the same programs that have been failing for 30 years. You mentioned DARE. Mm-hmm. You know, DARE was a good idea when it got started, but we're finding out that those programs aren't working. They're just not working. So what we need to do is find a tighter way to keep the drugs away from our kids. And Proposition 19 is going to do that, because the guy working the black market, the cartel, the gangbanger that's dealing, that's going to dry up for him. And so the next guy that's going to be selling marijuana is going to be asking for ID if Proposition 19 passes. And on top of that, our children are going to be a little safer because they're not going to be exposed to that random stray bullet from some gangbanger's ride-by. If we're drying up the cartels and the gangs, we're drying up the frequency of that kind of violence in our community. So there's the direct effect of the time for the officer in the field, the direct effect on our laboratories, and then there's the domino effect as we eat away and dry up the cartels and the gangbangers that profit from this market. we're going to have less violence in our community. So it's a win-win for police. And I understand why they're not getting behind it, because they're clinging to the status quo, and they just need a little bit more enlightened self-interest.
Yeah, and we're speaking with Stephen Downing, former Los Angeles Police Department Deputy Chief. And, you know, you bring up all these great points as to how it would be good for law enforcement as far as, you know, freeing up the crime labs and freeing up the time of the officers. But we still have people like Los Angeles Sheriff Lee Baca, who is saying that even if Prop 19 passes, he'll still enforce it. He'll still bust people caught with marijuana. And I'm wondering if maybe part of what they're clinging to isn't necessarily just the status quo, but also the money to be made from civil asset forfeiture and from the federal burn grant program. Any comments on that?
Well, are you referring to the treatment programs?
No, the programs where the federal government grants money to state and local police jurisdictions to go after drug offenders.
Well, I guess that's part of the concern. I know that they get a lot of money, and I know that the drug czar and DEA, they are prohibited by law from engaging in any research or providing any kind of experimentation that may result in advocacy for ending prohibition. And I know that they send flyers out to these DAs and the chiefs and tell them, they nitpick their or cherry pick their statistics and get them out to the chiefs and the departments and the DAs around the country. And every year they nitpick them. Like this year, they nitpicked it to say that 12-year-olds, there's a spike with 12-year-olds, so we got to keep this kind of thing going. But if you would have noticed, if you'd seen in the Los Angeles Times just 2 weeks ago, there was a op-ed from a Dr. Evan Wood, who's the founder and director of the Center for Drug Abuse Research. I forget the exact name of it. It's out of the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. And what he said in that study is that they got from the United States government all of the data regarding drugs that the government collects and pays for. They used that data and made us and provided a study that said, using strictly that data, that prohibition of marijuana is a bad thing for our country socially, however they express themselves. And they were confused in that article, my word, confused, because the federal government did not come to that same conclusion. So I dropped them a note, and I said the reason they didn't come to that same conclusion is because there's a law that forbids them for doing anything that will promote the prohibition of marijuana. So to answer your original question, I think that there is probably a lot of strong-arming going on between the federal government and local sheriffs and police departments, and they're laying down threats. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. But I don't think it's good law enforcement for law enforcement managers to make decisions based on staying with a program that is harmful to society just so they can get more money. And I'll give you an example of, I've seen this several times, especially in the smaller cities, when we have these laws that allow the seizure of automobiles and boats and property, when they find any drugs, when they find one seed of marijuana. City managers have provided, line items in chiefs of police budgets for this or that, whatever category you want, but they put no money in it. Mm-hmm. And they say to the chief, that money is going to have to come from property seizures. After you seize that car and it goes and it's sold and you get and we get our piece of the action, that's going to go in your budget. Well, I know one small city where the chief made it the top priority because he wanted his budget. And so all of the officers were doing on patrol, they were looking for opportunities to seize people's cars and property so that the chief could build his budget. Well, that makes no sense at all when you should be focusing on what the crime problems in your area are. So maybe the DEA is and the drug czar is going to take some money away from these guys with grants, but they won't need that money. Mm-hmm. If we dry up the cartels, they won't need that money. Now, the treatment money, that's going to be a real big joke, because what they keep telling us is that the marijuana treatment for people picked up with marijuana, the treatment is just sky high.
Yeah.
Well, the reason it's sky high prior to it becoming as long as it's a misdemeanor in California, what they do is they go into the master calendar court with their ticket, one of those 61,000 tickets written. They go into the master calendar court, and somebody walks up to them and says, you can get this off your record if you agree to take treatment. Just tell the judge you'll take treatment, and off you go, and it'll be taken off your record. So they take that option. And that option is to go to 10 treatment sessions. Now, we're spending money as taxpayers for 10 treatment sessions when the individual doesn't need any treatment, because marijuana is not causing him any kind of problem that he would need treatment for.
Mm-hmm.
So now, as you may know, Schwarzenegger made it an infraction. I guess that goes into effect in January. Well, when it's an infraction, the only thing that happens in court is you go in and you pay a $100 fine. There's not going to be any diversion to treatment. And so treatment is what has been spiking in the past is going to plummet, because it's all nonsensical waste of taxpayers' money. So again, we're saving money for the taxpayer.
Yeah.
And if the feds are going to threaten to take away funding for various law enforcement things, then I guess people are going to have to rise up and complain about it.
Yeah.
And I think that if Proposition 19 passes, we're going to be demonstrating to the federal government that this is the people's movement, and the people are rising up, and they're complaining about it, and we're going to do the same thing that we did to end prohibition, only it's going to be easier. When we ended alcohol prohibition, we had to get rid of an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The only thing we have to do now to turn the feds around is get them to change their laws in Washington, and we'll have to start with our attorney general, and we'll have to start with our senators and our assemblymen, and I think the states that follow us will have to do the same thing.
Absolutely. And we're speaking again with Stephen Downing, the former Los Angeles Police Department deputy chief, a speaker now for law enforcement against prohibition. Time for one last quick question. A lot of the opponents have been painting Prop 19, if it passes, as leading to mayhem on the freeways and a whole bunch of new stone drivers. What can you tell folks to ease their fears about that scaremongering?
The thing is that we already have millions of people using marijuana, and they have been for some time. I think one of the better examples to give, 9 years ago, medical marijuana was made legal in California. There has been no increase in traffic accidents, in fatal traffic accidents in California in the 10 years within the 9 year period that medical marijuana was passed. So that kind of tells you that with the passage of the law, that allowed people to legally access marijuana, there has been no commensurate increase in traffic fatalities. So that suggests to me that there was also no increase in the numbers of people that started using marijuana just because it was made legal under those circumstances. Now, when Proposition 19 passes, there may be a little spike in people using it just because, oh, well, maybe I'll try it. I'm one who won't try it because I've never used marijuana in my life and I'm not attracted to it. And I frankly think it's kind of disgusting, but because I feel that way doesn't mean that I would deny it to anybody else. So then you have the phenomenon in the Netherlands. When it was kind of made de facto legal, there was no increase. And in the Portugal, the same thing, there was no increase. So I don't see how there's going to be any increase whatsoever in fatal traffic accidents. We've had a 10-year decline in this state, and I don't expect that to be reversed at all. They also talk about, oh, my gosh, there's no test. Like the breathalyzer. Well, nothing's changed. Proposition 19 does not change the law. There's one law in California for DUI, and that says that you can't drive under the influence of alcohol or any other drug, including marijuana. Now, to tell you how insignificant arrests for driving under the influence of marijuana are, they do not even maintain any statistical base for arrests based on persons being under the influence of marijuana. Now, when you come to the test, there are blood tests and there are urine tests, and both of them will tell you whether there marijuana is in your system, cocaine or lidocaine. You know, it's all about the arrest. First thing, the police officer has to have probable cause that a driver is driving under the influence. And his probable cause is generated from the way he's driving down the street. Then they pull him over and make an investigation, and they talk to them, they get him out of the car, and they give him a field sobriety examination. If they fail that field sobriety examination, that's the time they give him the breathalyzer. Now, if they failed it and they didn't have a breathalyzer, they don't show anything on a breathalyzer, the next thing that you've got to think about is that they're under the influence of some kind of drug. But the fact is, they've still been under the influence of something, and they didn't pass that test. So they're subject to arrest, and then they're subject to a blood test, and that blood test will corroborate what they were under the influence of at the time. So all of this talk about, oh, my gosh, we don't have a test for marijuana. Well, they've never had a test for marijuana.
Right, right.
They've never had one. Why is that a new deal?
Yeah, if we're busting people for marijuana DUIs now, we'll still be busting people for marijuana DUIs after Prop 19. Stephen Downing, you make
a very
logical argument. Thank you so much for joining us here on Normal Show Live. We appreciate everything you're doing out there.
You're welcome. See you later. Bye-bye.
This is Normal Show Live.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary and it's not in mine.
Providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
I don't care what you say. That ain't right. I said, that ain't right. That ain't right. I don't care what you say.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant. All right, everyone, welcome back to the show. 53 after the hour, excuse me. And there is a group out in Arizona. I know we've been talking about Prop 19 in California a lot, But Arizona is voting on Prop 203, which would legalize medical marijuana in that state. Well, I just got this video in, and this is a video being sent out to various voting groups all across the state of Arizona, a little DVD video that they filmed in Venice Beach, California, to try to scare people about what medical marijuana would be like under Prop 203. Let me show you a little bit of that video, and I'll narrate for the folks that are just listening in. Medical marijuana is out of control in Venice Beach, California. Journey Healing Centers oppose medical marijuana. This video, of course, is just completely offensive because it shows nothing about what medical marijuana would be like under Prop 203. Prop 203 is one of the tightest crafted medical marijuana bills that has ever come before the voters, as far as initiatives go. And this scaremongering of trying to frighten people that it's going to be like Venice Beach under Prop 215 is just absurd. What a shameful move by these rehab doctors. Journey Recovery Centers is the group that's putting this out. They're so dependent on the status quo of forcing marijuana users into their business through the criminal justice system that they're blatantly misrepresenting what Arizona's Prop 203 is about. They know damn well they're in the Arizona initiative is nothing like what is going on in California. Hell, even the folks in Arizona cities as large as Venice Beach wouldn't even be able to grow their own medical marijuana in their home. They're forced to buy it from dispensaries that are within 25 miles of their home. A dispensary that requires security plans approved by the state. A dispensary that requires identification checks, and a dispensary that requires electronic tracking of purchases. That's certainly not what is going on in Venice Beach, California. However, this video does illustrate why passing Prop 19 in California is so critical. While there are 13 other states that have very well-regulated medical marijuana programs, opponents are always going to point to California, the least regulated medical marijuana state, and to those in California who work in the gray areas of those regulations. Videos like this one are the reason why patients in New Jersey have to virtually be on their deathbeds to use cannabis. Why sick and disabled Minnesotans, Connecticuters, and New Hampshireites still suffer thanks to gubernatorial vetoes of governors that were scared of what's going on in California. It's why patients in the existing medical marijuana states face hostile legislators trying to curtail their rights with every new session of the legislature. Passing Prop 19 reframes the open-air market feel of Venice Beach from the don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining medical marijuana frame to an acknowledgement of what everybody sees in that video. Cannabis consumers getting permission slips to avoid police harassment. Now, let me get to some of the stuff that they mention in their press release. The Journey Healing Centers say they are one of the only addiction centers publicly opposing Prop 203 and Prop 19 because the propositions are misleading and will increase addiction. That's completely untrue. Hard drug addiction rates in places like the Netherlands, which tolerates marijuana use, and Portugal, which has decriminalized all drugs, have held steady or declined following those policies. And those countries' rates of drug abuse are far lower than the addiction rates in the United States. Now, another point they try to make, these Journey Healing Centers, they say, while these addiction experts support medical marijuana use for critically ill patients, the reality is only 2% of current patients use it for serious illnesses. Well, that's bunk, too. This is that same fuzzy math where somebody counts how many patients there are, and then they count how many are using for cancer or AIDS, they divide the latter by the former, and then they discount all the people who are lawfully using marijuana for pain, nausea, seizures, spasms, glaucoma, cachexia, and all the the other qualifying conditions as not being seriously or critically ill. They also want to say, oh, well, there's Marinol. You can just use Marinol, which we all know doesn't work. And when you're a puking chemotherapy patient, it's awfully hard to keep a pill down for 45 minutes. And the worst part of this is that they say that we say they oppose this because they'd lose business, but they say, oh, no, we'd have more business because there'd be more addiction. Bull. Marijuana is listed as the primary substance abuse by 17% of rehab clients, second only to alcohol at 42%. So, of the 1.88 million people that are going to rehab, 321,000 of them this year went to rehab for pot. Now, as for the reasons they went to rehab for pot, it's because the cops and the criminal justice system forced them to. A majority, 57% of the people in rehab for pot, went there because a court sent them there or they had the jail or rehab choice. That's 183,000 marijuana rehab clients who are in there for no other reason but to avoid jail. That's 10% of all the people in rehab who wouldn't go there if marijuana is legal. That's why Journey Healing Centers opposes it.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Thanks for joining us here for Normal Show Live. Hour 2 is coming up next. We're going to play the entire telephone town hall meeting for Prop 19 that took place last night. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.